a public service announcement with guitar. Know your rights. All three of them. Number one, you have the right not to be killed.
And welcome, everybody, to this week's edition of Your Rights at Work. Chris Garlock here with Ed Smith. Hey, if you've got questions about your workplace rights, the ones you have, the ones you don't have, the ones you wish you had, now's the time to give us a call, 202-588-0893. Ed Smith on vacation, but still here on the radio. Thank you, brother.
Still volunteering for the great WPFW. It's good to be back on a Thursday, on a lovely Thursday up here in Cape Cod. Hey, Chris, you know, Your Rights at Work is a proud founding member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. There's over 150 labor radio and podcast shows just like this all across the country. Best way to check them out is go to laborradionetwork.org. That's laborradionetwork.org. And listen about great labor stories, and we've been seeing a lot of great labor stories lately. That's the good thing.
Across the country and around the world. On today's show, we're going to be talking with Dan Krause. He's the director of the brand new, and I mean brand new, Netflix documentary, The Anthrax Attacks. Maybe you've seen it, In the Shadow of 9/11. We're also going to have Dina Briscoe. Two of her members at the American Postal Workers Union died in those attacks. Now, our first guest today directed the Netflix documentary. It's out now. You can see it. It's called The Anthrax Attacks in the Shadow of 9/11. That's something that we here in the DC area know a lot about. We lived through it back in 2001. But the subsequent investigation into who actually carried out those attacks went on for so many years that, frankly, like me, you might have lost track of this story. The Anthrax Attack is a deep and fascinating and, frankly, I'll be honest, a bit scary dive into that years-long investigation. Let's take a quick listen to the film's trailer. Michael, you want to cue that up?
An invisible enemy killing Americans one breath at a time.
I saw this letter.
Investigators have been searching for the culprit in the anthrax by mail attacks.
As far as high-profile cases, I can't think of anything as big as this.
Inside was what appeared to be sand. It said, death to America, death to Israel, Allah is great.
The big fear was this is the second wave of a terrorist attack.
Do you know how much mail, how many packages I've opened?
These terrorists must be pursued. They must be defeated.
We started comparing it to our databases, and it matched up with this strain called the AIM strain. The person that we were pursuing was one of us.
We really did have to rely on the people that were the experts.
It makes itself seem harmless, slips past the defenses.
How do we know that they were being helpful? Each one of them became a suspect.
It created a lot of fear and paranoia.
I am not the anthrax killer.
Quickly, you want to figure out how to rule people out and how to rule people in.
They were happy to have a patsy. Nothing justified the treatment that he received.
His reputation had been sullied.
You're saying it was me? That I'm some kind of terrorist?
The global whodunit is now shrunk to one flask in one lab, created and maintained by one guy.
And that was the trailer for the brand new Netflix documentary, The Anthrax Attacks in the Shadow of 9/11. Joining us now from Oakland, California, is the film's director, Dan Krause. Welcome to Your Rights at Work, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us, Dina Briscoe. She's the president of the nation's capital and Southern Maryland local of the American Postal Workers Union. Dina's in the film. And two of the five people killed in those anthrax attacks were members of her local. Welcome to Your Rights at Work, Dina.
Thank you for having me as well.
Dina, let me just start off with you, if you don't mind. If I can ask you to remind us of the names of the two postal workers who died in 2001.
Yes, Joseph Kersine Jr. and Thomas Morris Jr.
So I think it's really important to remember them. And I know the facility has been renamed in their honor, and there's a plaque. We're going to talk more about that. Dan, you're an Oscar-nominated director for your films The Death of Kevin Carter, 2005, and Extremist in 2016. Your documentary The Kill Team won the Independent Spirit Award, Truer Than Fiction Award, and Grand Jury Prize at Tribeca. What got you interested in the anthrax attack story?
Simply that it had become forgotten in the intervening 21 years since these events took place. Add to that the fact that it was living, as the title suggests, in the shadow of 9/11, this kind of tectonic shift in American history. I think a lot of people, including myself, had filed the anthrax attacks generally under the heading of foreign terrorism. We kind of lump all these things together and I had forgotten anyway, that this was an act of domestic terrorism. And I had also forgotten just how strange and unsettling the story was. And I don't think I realized at the time that the investigation spanned 7 years. It was the largest investigation in FBI, one of the largest investigations in FBI history. And so it just felt like it was a good time 20 years later to look back with a clearer lens at these events and try to parse exactly what happened.
Quite an undertaking, it really, and thank you for doing it, because it's one of those things here in DC. I thought I knew everything about it, and it turned out I knew almost nothing about it. So thank you for doing all the spade work. Let me get my co-host Ed Smith in on this, and Dina, I'm going to come to you, but feel free to jump in anytime, sister. All right.
All right. Thank you,
Ed.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the program. And Dan, thank you so much for producing and getting this film out. It's fascinating. And just like Chris said, I thought I knew a lot. And I knew, like Chris said, almost absolutely nothing. I also remember my wife and I she had to go to the doctor. She had broke out in a rash. And so she was, and this is in the middle of, it was hot, hot, hot. And she had to wear a lot of clothes to cover herself. And so she almost looked Arab in a way. And I remember getting on elevators and people like backing away from us, staring us down. And so I want to ask this question, both you, Dan and Dina, going back to that time, what was the sense of paranoia, if you will, or just the sense of what it was like around that time and how people felt? I mean, we all know we had the snipers here, and I remember ducking as you would pump gas and worrying and ducking around places. And anthrax was similar. It was very scary. So let's start with maybe Dina, what your reaction when your workers, how they felt, and then move on to Dan, if you don't mind.
Okay, there were so many feelings and so much fear during the crisis, and then afterwards so much pain, so many trust issues, not even just with the public or our employer, but also when we were sent to other places to work, where we went, they didn't trust us coming to their building. They felt we were bringing anthrax with us. Then people were afraid to go to their mailbox, including me. You just didn't know how to feel about it. And I was like in a daze about a lot of it, because I believe I was in shock that this happened.
So real quick, as a real quick follow-up, were you an officer in the union at that time as well?
And no.
Okay. All right.
No, I was Dan? A regular employee even before I became president. I was straight from the workroom floor.
Gotcha. Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I think what made this a unique moment for Americans was that, suddenly terrorism could be anywhere in our daily lives. I mean, the U.S. mail system touches every part of the United States. Your children go out to, get mail from the mailbox. So it was not something that was happening over there to them anymore. It was happening to everybody potentially. And, in the last couple of years, we've become sadly accustomed to the idea of an invisible threat hovering in the air, that we can inhale and potentially die from. But at that moment, the idea of this invisible pathogen potentially existing anywhere and with virtually no way to detect it was incredibly scary, especially a week after we had just been attacked in New York and Washington and Pennsylvania with these aircraft. So the degree of paranoia, I mean, we're talking about people lining up to buy gas masks. We're talking about shelves being cleared of Cipro, the antibiotic that protects against anthrax infection. I don't think it's dramatic to call the feeling at that time one of panic.
Dan, just to remind folks real quick of a thumbnail, because you know these attacks did happen right after the 9/11 attacks. And in a lot of ways, obviously, because those attacks were so devastating, the loss of life, the, you know, the three different sites, the anthrax attacks were sort of nebulous. But just to remind folks, because there were, I think, three different instances, the one that we're most familiar, of course, being in D.C. Can you just run that down for us real quick?
Yeah, the first person to become infected was in Florida. It was at a media company in Florida. And initially, his name is Bob Stevens. Initially, they didn't know that he had opened a letter with suspicious powder in it. They just, he started displaying symptoms. He went to the hospital. They diagnosed him with an anthrax infection. And the thinking was that maybe he had stirred up some naturally occurring anthrax in the soil on a hike or in a walk in the woods or something of that nature. It seemed like a freak occurrence, not an act of terrorism. It wasn't until later on that letters started appearing in Washington and New York that someone at the media company recalled him receiving a letter with some odd powder in it. And then the authorities started quickly putting together the dots that this was not a freak occurrence. This was actually a deliberate act. And then, immediately all eyes turned to foreign terrorism because, again, this is a week after 9/11. The language inside the letters echoed the language of foreign terrorists, Allah is great, death to Israel, things of that nature. So it was, clearly intended to appear as if it was the work of foreign terrorists. And it wasn't until scientists were able to isolate the strain, the particular strain of anthrax that was contained in those letters, that they realized that this could have come from a U.S. lab. It most likely did come from a U.S. lab.
We're talking with Dan Krause. He's the director of the new Netflix documentary, The Anthrax Attacks in the Shadow of 9/11. Also talking with Dina Briscoe, president of the nation's capital in Southern Maryland, local of the American Postal Workers Union. Dan, I'm really glad that you connected the anthrax attacks with the pandemic, because that certainly was what I was thinking about when I was watching it. The in addition, obviously, to the threat of the unseen and the pervasiveness, the other thing that I connected with was the what we now call frontline workers, which was not a phrase that we used back in 2001. And I really appreciate that you spend so much of the film. Much of the film obviously is involved in the mystery and some great dramatic performances. But you spend a fair amount of time with the workers, and including Dina and other folks. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that decision, and then get Dina to weigh in as well.
Yeah, I have to credit my producer, Sweta Vora, and researcher, associate producer, Daniel Ballone, with discovering the story, but bringing this story to all of our collective attention during the pre-production process. And the story about the postal workers, that is. And I remember feeling stunned that the story had gone basically unreported for the last two decades. I mean, it received very little attention. The workers who died in that postal facility and those who were sickened, the ensuing effort to bring attention to what had happened there, the fact that the place was kept open for so long after it was clear that anthrax very likely transited through that facility. It was shocking. We were absolutely shocked that first of all, that these events had taken place, period, but also that it basically had been wiped from our collective history. There was almost no reporting about it whatsoever. So we felt really lucky to have the opportunity to, put some daylight back on the story and the survivors and their efforts to, their 20-year effort to bring attention to what happened to them and remind people that they're still suffering from the exposure that they all endured two decades ago. And that's something I think people need to pay attention to.
Thanks. And Dina, I'd like you to talk about that a little bit, because, you know, as Dan brings out in the film, you know, when Senator Daschle's office had an exposure, that entire office building was shut down, I believe, Dan, within, I think, 2 hours, something like that.
Yes, within hours. That's right.
And at the same time, when it was detected in your facility at Brentwood, it was, I believe, days, right, Dina?
Yeah, mainly over like 10 days.
Before, 10 days.
Yeah, 10 days. And during that time, matter of fact, when Daschle announced about his letter, I was at Providence Hospital trying to figure out if I had an anthrax issue. Mm. And I saw the interview or his press conference on television while I'm sitting in the hospital. Mm. And I think that's when a lot of my shock came in, right after that, going back to work and being in that environment, because it was horrific for all of us as postal workers, and entrusting the Postal Service words that we were safe. We didn't know a lot about anthrax. They brought experts in there to talk to us about it, but we had to go with what we were told. And now we found out later that was the worst information that they could have ever shared. And then also to find out that they knew more than what they told us. That was hurtful. I want to thank Dan and Sweater for including us in this. When she called to do the interviews, I really didn't think it was going to be that. That was the way they put this together. It was awesome. And a tribute to our co-workers who lost their lives, because that's who we as Brentwood Exposed, the group that we started, that's what we always wanted to do, help others and keep this story fresh. So Dan, you and Sweater, the way you put this together, I could have never envisioned that that's what you were going to come out with. But thank you so much.
Oh, it was our pleasure, really.
Yes.
So first of all, audience, if you want to ask any questions to either Gina or Dan, now's the time to do it, 202-588-0893. Or if you have a comment about maybe a recollection about what you were thinking back then, if you can recall. You know, this is exactly why we have this show. One would not often think about anthrax as a workers' rights issue, but to me, it's forefront there. And I appreciate the fact that we're talking about this 21 years later. Dina, yes. So how was the experience having the interview? I mean, did it bring back some tough emotions? I mean, you know, I'm sure with filmmakers, they want to suck that out of you a little bit because in a good way. Right. I mean, you know, it's kind of like when I'm singing a song that matters to me, I want to put my emotions into it. So tell me about that process. And Dan, the same question from the flip side of the person trying to get stuff out of workers.
Yeah, they took me so far and so deep into that period that I was very overwhelmed. And it was good because I went through a very healthy process of forgiveness and trying to really understand what happened and then letting other things go, because I'm not going to learn everything. So when they interviewed me, there were moments when I had to pause and stop because it was so much coming out of me. But I appreciate it, because you don't want a lot of that to sit in you. I didn't even know how much was sitting in me. And then when I saw it and I learned so much, I thought, like Chris, you said, I thought I knew a lot about what happened, but I learned so much, and I watched it like 3 times and I still learn more and more. I appreciate them helping me with my process. This was definitely a part of my process, so I really appreciate that.
Dan?
It was an interesting time to be making a film. Is right during the early days of the pandemic, I think, when we did pre-vaccine, when we did these interviews. So I actually interviewed Dina and Terrell by Zoom, sort of like we're talking here, which is the first time I'd done anything like that. And I was afraid it would put some distance between us or make it hard to sort of, you know, to go deep, as Dina said.
Sure.
But, you know, within minutes, we forgot about all the technology because we were, I think we, you know, really had this connection, and we were just talking, you know, we were just two people talking. And I could feel, the thing that struck me most was just how present all of the emotions were, you know, inside Dina and Terrell, and how close to the surface they still were all these years later, that they, you know, this was clearly a traumatic thing that they lived through, that and in particularly a case like this where there's no closure, there's no end to it, there's no tidy bow that you can, you know, put around it and call it finished. It's something that you, you know, I imagine that you learn to live with. So I could feel that in our conversations. And, you know, I appreciated their courage and their dignity and the grace that they brought to, you know, every answer they gave me. I left those interviews feeling like there's hope for humanity. You know, these are the kind of people I want to spend time with.
That's very nicely said. It's interesting, you know, I think about coronavirus, COVID, and employers' responses. And we, you know, go back 21 years and the employers' responses seem to be the same, that we got it covered, don't worry about it, you're all good. And that's just not the case. And I know with the coronavirus spread, our national union had tons of pushback to CDC and the administration, first the Trump administration, and now a little bit with the Biden administration. Dina, tell me a little bit about your feelings, especially as a union leader now, in trusting the federal government or the DC government, and if we don't trust them, how do we combat that with getting information out to our members and the public in general?
I think the difference for me and today was I'm a union leader. And we have an awesome national union who were right on top of the COVID situation, put a lot of things into place. My role is to make sure that they're implemented locally. But at that time, I was a regular employee on a work from floor. And I had a voice, but not the type that I have now. But we started Brentwood Exposed. And starting that, we were able to help our coworkers. We'd be able to keep the public enlightened on what was going on. And we had different types of powers, because some things that we did there, I can't do as a union leader. But as a regular employee, I had a strong voice. So the trust issue comes in into me, one, using my own instincts, using facts, and pulling together with the workers as well as our union officials locally and nationally, and us working together to combat whatever they bring to us. We do that on a daily basis.
Dan, do you have a comment on that? Or
no, I mean, I just to say that, you know, you can sort of see Dina emerging as a leader in this film. We found this, you know, remarkable footage where Dina actually shows up at a press conference as they're announcing the, you know, the end of the FBI's investigation, 7-year investigation. Look who's sitting in among the press corps is Dina Briscoe with her hand up, challenging the head of the Postal Service to give the workers the attention and answer the questions that they still have remaining. That the case, you know, may be closed according to the U.S. government, but certainly the case isn't closed for this group of workers. And you know, you can see Dina standing up in that moment and becoming the leader she is today. So that was, you know, when we found that footage, we were very excited that we'd be able to sort of bring her, you know, story arc, as it were, to completion.
And that's the first time I saw that, when I saw that in the film, and I saw my emotions, and I saw my mother coming out of me. I really was thankful that you all were able to cover that. All I saw was the picture that was in the Washington Post, but that was very powerful. You all they just covered everything.
Yeah, no, I do really love the response from the head of the Postal Service. He seems legitimately stunned that he's being challenged.
Yeah, because I wasn't supposed to be there. It was supposed to be only, I learned later, you're supposed to have a White House press badge that I didn't have. So I didn't know that. And when they announced that they were going to do it, I said, I got to be there. I can't be anywhere else but there. And I was thankful. I think it was spiritual that I was able to get into that building and go in legitimately with my ID that I had, and was able to hear and see what, you know, they were going to share with the press, not us.
We're talking with Dan Krause. He's the director of the new Netflix documentary, The Anthrax Attacks in the Shadow of 9/11. Also, Dina Briscoe. She's president of the D.C. Maryland chapter of the American Postal Workers Union. Just a couple of minutes before we wrap up. Dan, one of the things I was thinking about in watching this film, you know, which is from events that happened, you know, 20 years ago, you're talking, and I've been very careful. I don't want to, people really need to watch it. I don't want to give away, no spoiler alerts here. There's a bunch of things that even if you lived here at the time, you're going to be surprised at, and I want you to be surprised. And you make tremendous dramatic use. You have an actor portraying one of the key roles for a reason which I can't even say because it would give it away. But it's a terrific performance. But you're dealing, as Dina was just referring to, with a lot of suspicion, a lot of paranoia. And, you know, back in 2001, I don't think it was as pervasive as it is these days. It has a whole sort of, I don't know if it's different, or I just wonder how you felt about exploring those issues in a 2022 film. Does that make sense?
I think it was certainly a thematic thread that we pulled, you know, quite often in the film, and we were, you know, aware of that kind of tension that existed back then and exists today, you know, for different reasons. But this, you know, environment in which the people that you are supposed to be trusting and relying on are the people that could also potentially be the greatest threat. And that was true both for Dina and her cohort at the Postal Service, who were, you know, not being looked after in the way that they should have by the people, you know, with authority to do that. But also for the FBI investigators who are working alongside the scientists, who were both their most trusted experts and the people most likely to have carried out this crime. So there was this odd tension that just pervaded the entire that entire period, where, you know, people had to sort of live in uneasy proximity to each other, but there was a lot of mistrust everywhere you looked. And that was something that I think is kind of a hallmark of that, you know, early 2001 period.
And Dina, your thoughts sort of looking back again with your 2022 post-pandemic eyes at this very similar sort of event from, you know, some 20 plus years ago?
It kind of feels very similar. It feels very similar for us to deal with COVID-19 and it's invisible, and then anthrax, which the difference is one is put out by someone to harm, and the other is a virus that both can attack all of us. And thankfully, didn't that many people. We lost people. People's lives were ever changed from the anthrax. I got sick. A lot of my coworkers got sick. You never know the numbers, as Terrell has stated, but it's still the same type of feeling and experience. You walk around not knowing if you're going to get COVID today or tomorrow. So it kind of feels similar, but this one, someone has put it out to harm you intentionally.
Dan, just as we wrap up, what was it that you'd like viewers to take away with your film?
I mean, in the context of this conversation, the thing that I think about most is just, the thing that really struck me emotionally in making this film was, you see at the end of the film, there's a sequence where you hear from Dina and some of the other folks that were directly affected by this, and their grace that they display, their ability to forgive, is really heartening. And even as I speak it now, I can feel kind of emotion welling up in me, because, you know, there are a lot of people that were involved in the story who had a very cynical outlook about what it all meant. But when I spoke to the postal workers and the survivors, they all had this much more, a much more beautiful and philosophical takeaway from it all. And that was something rather surprising and unexpected, and also very beautiful, and I found quite moving.
Dan, thanks so much. And that's a beautiful place to end, because I felt that too. I mean, obviously, you know, as a person with a, you know, in labor and doing a labor show, that's what I was looking for. But I really felt that Dina and her colleagues were the heart of the film, because, you know, everybody else, as you say, was, there's so much suspicion and paranoia. I mean, and people, you really got to watch it, because it really gets deep. I mean, Dan goes deep into that. And to be able to come back to Dina and her coworkers, and as you say, Dina, the forgiveness, the soul, the heart, really, I mean, I know you. I've known Dina for years. She's on my executive board at the Labor Council. I was not at all surprised, but Dina, that you opened up for the film, I really appreciate that. And Dan, good to hear that you not only you got that, you saw that, and you brought out that. And I think it's something that we've seen, to be honest, you know, with all the with essential workers across the country who have gotten us through this pandemic. And I think one of the things that your film does is show that that was not a one-off, that that's been there all along. And so thank you for finding that and seeing that and bringing that out. The film is The Anthrax Attacks in the Shadow of 9/11. It is on Netflix now. You can watch it and rewatch it, spread the word. It's a great film, whether you live in DC or not, but particularly for those of us here, I think it's an important film to watch. Dan Krause and Dina Briscoe, thank you so much for bringing us this film and for sharing time with us today. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.